Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe, Sold All His Comics writer. How you doing tonight, Joe?
You know, we're on the edge of singing.
We're on the edge of 17?
The lion sleeps tonight. It's just a whim away.
A whim away.
In the podcast, the mighty podcast. Oh, God, my shirts are tight.
I will stick with the They Might Be Giants version of that song, by the way.
Ooh, I might have to Google that after the podcast.
In the spaceship, the silver spaceship, the lion takes control.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I do.
We are lonely. That's the critic.
Ah. The only theme song I've got in my head is one about the not-too-distant future, next Sunday AD. Could it be?
But that's not what we're here to talk
could
about.
Could it be Thanksgiving is coming?
Usually, only if you're in the United States and once a year.
And what happens on Thanksgiving, Joe?
I go get White Castle hamburgers and prove to people that you can make stuffing out of them.
Well, I also go to the world Minnesota's largest candy store, but it's also Turkey Day. No, that doesn't mean that I give up being a vegetarian and eat a turkey. No, it means that somewhere there was a marathon of Mystery Science Theater 3000 running. Last year it was on Pluto TV, and it probably will be again. Maybe they'll even introduce the next season.
I think I'll just turn on MeTV and watch Gunsmokes.
Comet TV also is running Mystery Science Theater 3000.
I still got all the videotapes you gave me that you never, now that they're all online, I suppose you didn't need them. You had everything except the obscure Channel 23 ones.
Yeah, I put them all on DVD. But they're showing them, they look much better if they're not a second generation video copy.
Very true.
But we don't talk about MST3K. Well, we do.
We do.
Okay, we do.
But the question is, we left you. You were still in a cabin in Illinois.
No, now, not a cabin.
Are you still there?
Not a cabin. My parents' house.
Oh.
Now, my parents' house looks like a barn. And I don't mean, I mean it's shaped like a barn. It's shaped like one of those old red barns, but it's wood, stained wood. It's really beautiful, and I spent a lot of time out on the deck. I did, however, venture out once, Joe.
And?
I went to Macomb, Illinois.
That sounds like a hotbed of nowhere.
It was. It's where I went to college. Also, the town I was born in. And, Joe, you went to the U of M, right?
Yeah.
Now, were you one of those people when you went to the U of M who wore a college shirt and all that stuff?
I don't recall buying one.
I never did. I never wanted one. But we were going to Macomb to meet my niece and her husband and their new baby, who is named Scarlet Lydia, so I, of course, call her Lydia. Lydia, the tattoo lady.
You're going to take her out and get a tattoo.
I'm going to get her a lot of tattoos. But I said, nostalgia hit, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could have went to the college bookstore and bought the T-shirts that are $25 and the hooded sweatshirts that are $75. Am I that stupid with my money?
Hmm. Tough choice.
No, I went to the discount store and got the T-shirts for $7.99 each and a hooded sweatshirt for $25 and threw in two hats that were on discount for $5 each. I shop for clothes the way I shop for omnibuses. I buy them dirt cheap. I also stopped by where I worked when I was in college. I worked at the movie theater in college. But it's gone.
Well, yeah.
No, it's gone.
obliterated.
Torn down.
And never replaced.
Nope. The restaurant next to it when I was a small child was Mr. Steak, which was my mother's favorite restaurant in the world. And seeing that it was also obliterated kind of made her nostalgically sad. So we told stories of when I was a child and going to Mr. Steak. Also, the comic shop that used to be there, Journey Comics, it is now gone.
Aww.
But it is replaced by a gaming shop that has comics called A Boy and His Tiger.
I think I've heard of that.
Which, nice little gaming store. They had some decent comics, but very much a gaming store. A lot of board games going on. Very bright. A lot of light coming into the store, not like the two comic shops, because Journey once was underground, then it moved above ground. In most places, it was always very dark. But no, this a lot of open windows, a lot of open spaces, a lot of parents and kids, people playing those European board games. Very, very busy on a Saturday afternoon. And then Sunday morning, I got in the old car and rambled back up here to Minneapolis.
He's a rambling guy. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes.
And I had to stop at the world's largest truck stop.
Well, of course.
You have to. It's the law.
It is. It's kind of like going to Waldrug. You should. You can tell the difference between true patriotic Americans and other people by if they stop at the world's largest truck store, Waldrug. I'm trying to think of anything else outside the Midwest area, maybe.
Joe, I have a confession.
Yeah, I think you confessed it already.
You used to be Catholic, right?
According to my dad, once Catholic, always Catholic.
Okay. Can you please...
According to my dad, if I spit on your forehead and make the sign of the cross, you are now Catholic.
Oh, so it's kind of like how the Mormons can make somebody Mormon after they're dead.
I thought of it more like a zombie plague, but yeah, very similar.
So, will you please take Corey's confession?
Lad, this is going to cost you.
I've never been to Waldrug. I just said I had, so people would think I was cool.
I was going to call you on it because we ran the videotape, and we did not at any single time see you there.
That's because when we drove by, you know, myself and my sisters were all, oh, Waldrug, 40 miles. Oh, Waldrug, 20 miles.
Yeah, they got the sign space almost perfectly.
And then when we drove by, we were like, why didn't you stop at Waldrug? Dad said, I thought you kids were kidding. Of course, now he has admitted, he's like, I'm not stopping that goddamn place.
That's just a tourist trap.
I stop at all the tourist traps.
I think that's just a thing that dads have to say. We're not stopping there. That ain't happening.
I stop at every tourist trap. When my son was very, very little, he loved it. And then when he was a teenager, he hated it. Now, he loves it and he does it himself. But, no, the last couple days I just kind of kept reading. I read two Max Allan Collins novels that were not comic book related. They were good little political action thrillers. Read a whole bunch of Hellstorm. I read the entire Warren Ellis run of Hellstorm. One of the most fascinating things about that run. Did you ever read that run of comics, Joe?
I have not.
So it starts with Raph Nieves and Michael Baer. And they do the first four issues. Then Len Kaminsky, who was kind of the guy who always cleaned up everybody's messes, came in and did some. And then there was a cliffhanger, and the next issue was Warren Ellis, and he completely ignored the cliffhanger. Utterly ignored it, never resolved it. And the cliffhanger was that Damien Hellstrom had finally gone to hell to fight his father, and they were face to face. And then the next issue, nope.
Yeah, we'll never know.
It was so cool, the Warren Ellis. And in the letters page, he was like, yeah, I didn't like that. Didn't like that story, didn't want to do it.
Brilliant.
You could do that back then, I guess. Let's see. Didn't read much else, but I did learn something from my parents on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, did you know that there is a show on the cable TV that is basically live cops?
I wasn't aware of the cable TV. I know we've heard it like online and that you can tap into their radio feeds.
No. Chicago, this is video.
Dynamic.
This is video with someone in the studio who's like, all right, when we left New Orleans, somebody had been pulled over for a license problem, and now the police have discovered that there's marijuana in the car, so let's head over there and see what's happening. And they did all night. Because I was reading, and they kept watching it, and it was like 11 o'clock at night, and it's still going. It's like, I'm going to bed. I've seen enough shirtless white guys for one lifetime. Shirtless white guys missing teeth. So that was my vacation. Then I came back, and it's right back into the old feed. What did you do while I was gone?
So you didn't stop at any comic shops? You didn't find any more kitschy things on the way up to stop at other than the truck stop?
Well, the boy and his tiger.
Just one. Oh, he passed all those comic shops, and he's missed them all.
I wanted to get home. It was Hell in a Cell night.
Ah.
Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell.
Which is something I will probably be doing tomorrow.
Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell.
Ah. Humbug.
Oh, it was awesome. It was brutal. Shane McMahon's insane. Shane McMahon is just insane. He jumped off the cell through the... not the Spanish announce table, the regular announce table. And, you know, as he's doing it, it's like, oh, this won't be pretty.
Nope.
But no, I just kind of wanted to get home.
Cool.
That's usually how I am, though. When I go somewhere, I will explore. On the way back, it's like, I just want to get home.
I think it depends on what I would want to look at on the way home. You know, I mean, I'd probably get to Minnesota and like, okay, I've seen everything in Minnesota. Let's bolt home. But there's still places, Iowa side, that I wouldn't mind stopping at, especially in Dreyersville. I kept telling Corey he should stop, see the Field of Dreams, and actually get a picture of coming out of the corn. You know, when I was there, the corn was like maybe as high as my ankle. Just not quite the same. But we'll someday I'll get down there in the fall.
Someday.
And then, of course, they've got the I think they used to have a Ertl factory there, so they had all their die-cast, what do you call it, overstock or damaged ones there. So, and since I opened my toys anyway, since I'm a sick guy, you know, I don't care if they're damaged anyways. So there are two places, and I'm curious as to what other comic shops are in Iowa, because when I was with Chris, my big thing was she let me stop at Metropolis, Illinois. And, of course, I let her stop at every 12 wineries around the area.
Wineries?
Wineries. Yep.
Okay.
And she sampled it all, and since I was driving, by the time we got back, she was really basted nicely.
She was really sleeping.
No, that came later, but she was just glad I was driving. Ugh. No, while you were gone, we went to that their fall Comic Con at the Edumacation Building on the 8th.
Did you get edumacated?
Or no, I'm sorry, the 7th, because it was Saturday. Actually, I it was quite a bit of edumacation there, because you know, I had the 3 days off, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Thursday, I think I told you this, Corey. Did you know that a box of unbagged comics weighs a hell of a lot more than a box of bagged and boarded comics?
Yes.
Oh, man. I had all afternoon planned out to make this particular run. You know, and you're basically up the steps, do kind of a question mark S around the kitchen doors, down on the patio, and down into the garage. Had 19 boxes to move. I swear, every third box I had to stop and rest or stretch or something, you know, just a couple of times. I just, okay, that's it. I'm going to go do something else.
You're going to have to get one of those chair things that's on all the TV shows my parents watch, where you sit in the chair and it goes up the stairs. Just put the comic box on that and push the button.
Nope, nope. I am just going to not put comics in long boxes anymore. Ugh. But I got all of them, 19 boxes, in and out. And fortunately, my brother-in-law let me borrow his band. If you are in the Twin Cities area looking for a sound guy, I'm talking about like a band, you know, kind of like our friends, the Coffells.
Oh, I thought you meant like the guy in the Police Squad movies who makes all the weird noises.
Well, he does make weird noises, but I don't know if that would, you know, quite the same.
Oh. We need either a guy who makes weird noises.
Look up Cody. I can't think of his last name all of a sudden. I'm so embarrassed. Anderson. You'd think it would be real easy, huh? Cody Anderson. Or just contact me and I'll get you in touch with him because he does really well. He let me borrow his van that he uses for sound. Needed it back Saturday morning, so of course the problem was is I had to make damn sure that I got rid of all 19 boxes, and I was able to get them out. I lucked out on Friday because we had some shit-ass rain hit about 3, 4 o'clock and just go all the way through. Well, it's kind of tapered off on Saturday morning. So, but I took a, they said, okay, set about 2. So I trekked out there, I figured about 12:30. And, I got there, and of course, there are people setting up, and they're real cool about it. So I was able to get everything in. Chris came and gave me a hand. Dana came and gave me a hand. So we were able to get everything in before the rain hit. Thank God. Oh, that would have been a pain in the butt. Everything's set up. I actually had a picture of it on my Facebook page. I suppose I could put it on Crazy Comics if you want. The last ride of P&J Comics. And
I got the next one.
No, I got to tell you, this is probably the last ride. Because when it hit...
Did you leave your fingerless gloves on the floor?
Nope, nope. No. That's a you problem, not me. That's an Undertaker thing. I have... fingered gloves. I'm not as cool as the Undertaker. No, something should have told me, because usually the first thing that happens is when you set up, the dealers are on you like, you know, Oprah on a canned ham, and they're just nobody there. The dealers were there. They were setting up, and I kind of hung around till about 6 or so, and then me, Gruber, and Al went down to Mama's Pizza, which, you know, we've talked about in podcasts past. But there wasn't anybody there. I mean, people came. They kind of poked around. But there wasn't anybody digging through the dollar bins. One guy went through. I had a bunch of Spawn number ones for $2. And, you know, so I got the other runs there for $1. And I wasn't interested. Just Spawn number ones. And then he had them later at his table for $5. So I'm like, whatever. But it kind of, I don't know, it just kind of set weird. When the con opened, the attendance was good. It stayed busy almost the entire time, you know, at least towards the end. They stay open till 6 now, so that extra hour kind of meanders as people wander out, look for last-minute deals. But depending on who you talked with dealer-wise, sales were either really soft or really good. And I think one of the problems I had is, you know, I had some really nice stuff, and it was all set out $1 a piece, but... Across from me were a guys just had rows of tables. I think they were Comics for Less is what they go under. And they had all their stuff at 50 cents.
Oh, the bastards.
And there were a lot of other people. Well, no, there were a lot of other people that had dollar books and $2 books and things like that. I don't know of any big sales that went. I did see one guy, he picked up an All-Stars comics, you know, one of the JSA ones.
Yeah.
It looked like he had a price tag of $600 on it. So there were probably some big ass sales around. The guests you talked to were doing great. They all had a good con that I'm aware of. I didn't spend a lot of money because I didn't actually bring a lot of money, but I did pick up a few things. I either don't have it or never had it. ROM number 3. And I was able to find a copy for $1. So that was pretty good. That was actually a guy, I think I got that from Greg Hammer there. And so I got one of my runs done, which is nice. So I have all the ROMs now, which is good. I picked up an Orion Omnibus by Walt Simonson from Comic College. he gave me a good deal on it. He was half pricing it, and you know, I've never read it. I love Walt Simonson's stuff, so I've got high hopes for it. I basically from Pat, I always try to get a cheap deal from him, and he blew out his hardcovers, all of them, for like $150 at the end of the con.
Oh, wow.
He just didn't want them anymore. And I was kind of like, I was like, Pat, did you blow out that $300 Crisis hardcover you had? And he's like, yeah, I just got rid of it. Went to another dealer that he does a lot of stuff with. But before he did that, I picked up Wonder Woman by Mike Diodato. This is the Mike Diodato and William Mischer Loeb's run of Wonder Woman. Back when she, I don't know what you call it.
Worked at Taco Bell.
Yeah. And, a run I remember reading fondly, and I hope it didn't add that bad. I did pick up a Captain America Hot Wheel. I'm not sure where it came from. Just 2015. Might have been a San Diego one or something. Just a little high-end one, which is kind of cool. The weird thing that I sold and that people were really pawing through, I brought a bunch of record albums. You know, LPs, 33s, 45s. I just packaged them up. I had some that could fit in the record album bags that I had, and they looked really good. Other ones I couldn't fit because I had double LPs or the cardboard was a little thick. But people just looked through them like crazy. I mean, I had some really esoteric stuff. A lot of this dates from my DJ days in the 80s. I mean, I had like Pac-Man Fever, Monkees Pool It. That was the original Monkees. That's when they did their comeback thing. Was that 86, I think?
Yep, and I was in college.
They did another album after that called Pool It. And
what about the new Monkees?
Sold them. Actually, I did have a 45 with them that nobody picked up. I was talking with one guy because he was questioning about prices on 45s, and I said, well, the big thing is that towards the end of when 45s were slowly dying out, you'd find them just in the generic sleeves. If you have them with photographic sleeves, they actually command a little bit more. So, you know, whereas the record album might be $2, if you actually have the sleeve and in good shape, could be upwards of 10. A lot of people dug through those. A couple other record albums I sold. Doonesbury. Apparently, I thought it was based off the animated show, and the guy who bought it from me said, no, it's based, the animated show is based on the musical, and this is actually from the musical. And that was kind of neat. I did sell, Corey, do you remember the wrestling album?
Why, yes, I do. I believe, no, Piledriver was the one that was produced by, what's his name? The guy from American Idol. Simon Cowell.
Simon Cowell. No, I sold my copy of the wrestling album, but I did have a Record Day exclusive where they re-released Piledriver and the wrestling album in a two set, and each one had a colored vinyl on it. Record Day is kind of like Free Comic Book Day. The difference being is that they allow record stores to buy their exclusive records and sell them on that particular day. And I think there's a local comic book day that floats around every so often. It's kind of a similar thing. You can buy exclusive comics to sell on that day. I bought this particular one off of eBay because when I called the local record store, most of them either didn't order it or ordered just one copy.
Bastards.
Not realizing that the wrestling guys would all come in looking for it. Because, I could have sold about 20
bitches
of them, but I didn't buy any. So the one that didn't sell that people really looked at and chuckled, Howard the Duck. I had that album, and everybody looked at it and go, yeah, we had such high hopes for that movie. So... conversation-wise, I was able to catch up. Butch showed up. I talked
Butch
to
showed
him.
Up.
Up a little bit. Oh, yeah. We got a picture on our Crazy Comics of you, me, and Butch.
Oh, good.
And I talked with Pete Krause briefly. I got to catch up with him and never saw him the rest of the con because it was so busy. I talked with Paul Fricke, Pat Broderick, of course, one of the guests. A little bummed out. He didn't bring the commissions that Pat and I had. But, you know, to be fair, I did not realize he lived in Tampa and got a little you know, a little sidetracked when a certain hurricane come rumbling through. Although he said all of his stuff was pretty safe. And he also lost track of which con we were at. So I have sent him an email since to try to catch up with him, but I haven't been able to get a hold of him. Did talk with Dan Juergens, me, Big Mike, and him talked for a little bit. Talking a little bit about the comic industry, you know, and, you know, pretty much things that you and I have echoed in past conversation about sales going down. I think by the time we were finished, we thought, you know what, Marvel might need a regime change.
Well, Marvel's released some figures, by the way, this week.
Well, cool. Let me round up the con thing by...
Well, I want to throw this in before we forget. You know how, Marvel's in trouble. Marvel needs a regime change.
No, I don't know about that.
This was Marvel's third most profitable year in their history.
Well, and that's the bottom line.
Marvel Publishing's third most profitable year.
They don't, but that doesn't mean they necessarily made a lot of sales.
No, they made money.
Yeah,
this is
but
the publishing
again,
end.
Yeah, and again, but sales are dropping, but they're making more money on what they have, which means they're squeezing you and I, the listeners, out of their hard-earned nickels and stuff.
Nope. They're expanding in other markets. They're up 6% in mass market.
You know, I was telling Corey at the beginning of this episode, we're not going to talk sales this week because we wanted to talk about you traveling, me con, and we'll do a sales thing next time. But not, Corey needs to get these sales in because they burn his brain. He is so fixated on the sales. And we even talked about that when me, Juergens, and Mike were together. I said, you know, Corey just tracks these things almost methodically.
Well, it's because all of this crap out there, comic sales are in trouble, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Marvel knows, the people at Marvel know, and they've been saying internally for a decade, comic stores are going to die. We have to expand outside of comic stores. So these fanboys, and I'll just touch on it real quick, at the New York Comic Con, at the retailer conference, Marvel had to shut down the retailer conference early because one of the retailers got up and started ranting, saying that he was sick of all these comics with women and Negroes and homos.
Also, I heard he was being booed by the audience. So.
Right. But how many places are like that?
And
Marvel's like, the women and the Negroes and the homos are the new customers.
Yeah.
And they're not going into these comic shops. They're going to Barnes & Noble. They're going to Toys R Us. They're going to Walmart. They're going to Kmart.
They're at the libraries. How many times did I would talk about waiting for someone to drop the Ms. Marvel or the Cage or one of the Black Panther graphic novels so I could scoop it up and, you know, rather than read it there, I'll take it home and read it, you know. And even Dan Juergens talked about it, the conundrum between dropping sales and attendance at Comic Cons. Because even the con was tremendously, I don't know, there were tons of people there. You know, people in costumes, families, all ages. I mean, some of the cutest things. I don't take pictures of it. I did post a lot of pictures of people cosplaying and that. But, you know, there's a little girl and a Supergirl, and she's just skipping along as her Ma's dragging her down the aisle. She's just in her own little world having fun. But she dressed up like Supergirl and saw a couple other kids like that as well. I think you're right on that. And this is something that even I talked about when I had Hot Comics. And they were talking, this is back in the 90s. And Gary, what's his name from
Fangraphics? Gary Gross.
Gross talked about it. He had this real interesting article I don't have anymore that talks about comic sales have been dropping ever since the Golden Age. Every so often there's spikes. But, you know, at that time when I had the comic shop, a best-selling comic was, what, 100,000 comics? Or was that with Crazy Comics?
With Cray.
Yeah, 100,000 was a best-selling comic. And the best-selling book has to sell 3 million to get on the list. And how many people in the United States?
330 million.
So we're already a pimple on the buttocks of the publishing universe and going down all the time.
Well, and that 3 million, that was Harry Potter. Your average...
Well, that was actually like, before Harry Potter, because this was back when
oh, you're talking Hot Comics.
Yeah, yeah. These are the last times I saw the statistics. And this was something that Harlan Ellison talked about. So it's not even my argument. He just said, you know, we're kind of nothing on the edge of nothing here. But you would never guess that at the con, because there were tons of people. People were in pretty good mood. You know, I talked about the guests seemed to do good. Sales, depending on the dealer, were soft. Now, Pat and I, this was the last ride of P&J Comics, because we just got to the point for what we spent on the tables and what we got in return, it just wasn't worth it. It's too hard physically. It's too much mentally. You know, even now I'm waffling between, we talked about it at the very beginning of the con. I did sell all 19 long boxes. The count came down to 16. Because we sold about 3 long boxes worth during the con. And most of them, it actually did go to my buddy Myrtle. He's not under Myrtle Comics anymore. He's under Gemini Comics, which is his astrology sign, I guess. So I was glad he was there. My wife was glad he was there. We were able to just get rid of it. And, you know, it's almost, how would you say, I mean, geez, I've been working this since January trying to get this going. And when it's done, it's almost a relief, because it's like, this is all gone. This is stuff that either I don't care about or things that don't have an eBay value. A lot of things sold out of it. And yeah, I'm a little disappointed because I had some pretty good stuff in there. I mean, there was a lot of current things, but... You know, then I look at what I've got left, and I'll start reading through them. And, you know, there'll be more. There's other comic shows coming up, such as MSP Comic-Con 2018, which is the 30th year anniversary. And, of course, it'll be May 19th and May 20th, 2018, at the Grandstand. So if you're a betting man, some people are already, oh, this might be the last year. And I say, well, yeah, just like the year 2000 was the last year for us. Anytime you put a zero behind a number, people tend to freak out. And, of course, my mission is to hopefully get you, I'm pointing at you, Mr. Strode, at least to make a guest appearance. Because it'd be nice that everybody that's at least alive that had something to do with MCBA could at least... Or maybe we should just get a large cardboard cutout, and I could just put you right behind the charity table.
Oh, I like that.
So, well, either way,
going to be there.
If we can find them, some of the people we can't find. Some guys like Al Payne, he's busy working Dynamite. So, mark those days down. I mean, we'll talk about it here and there coming up, but really, they're not putting advance tickets on sale till April 1st. So we got a ways to go.
April 1st.
Yeah. Well, it didn't really matter. What happened is people. They started January 1st, and then what it is you get your verification that you paid for advance tickets, and you show it, either print it out or put it on your phone. Well, a lot of people lost it. So they figured, just push it forward so you don't have, you know, a half a year to miss advance tickets. And, you know, the people who are prone to do that will do it anyways. And the people who are real early, you know, those free grab bags, 400 on Saturday, 200 on Sunday. They'll be there. So I will be there, of course, doing the charity booth with my daughters. And, you know, it's never too early if you were looking for a tax write-off. I mean, I'll pimp you guys on this a little bit later. But, you know, if you've got some comics or some books or something you want to donate and take a tax write-off, let me know. I'll have the tax forms ready for you. If you give it to me before this first of the year, you can have it for this coming tax season. If you want to wait till we get closer to the con, so be it. So, got rid of all 19 long boxes. Didn't really make as much money as I'd hoped, but it was a good con. I mean, fun con, and I just, like I said, I don't think Pat and I have the gumption to want to deal anymore.
Gumption.
So, no gumption, no deal. That was pretty much the con.
Well, when I got back, I had a box on my
Me
couch.
Me too. Mine was wet.
Mine was wrapped by my wonderful FedEx guy. He wraps it in plastic. Wait a minute. Wrapped in plastic. Just like Laura Palmer.
Hmm.
Oh, my God.
Is that magazine still being published?
No.
Oh. That was a magazine that came out for a while, so look on
it
eBay.
It came out for over a decade. It was great.
Yeah, and then it just kind of, you thought it would have maybe tried to make a comeback, but.
Well, the people involved aren't really speaking to each other anymore.
Ah,
and it's fascinating with Facebook, because I'm friends with a lot of Twin Peaks fans, and some of them were like, yo, I sent in this theory, and the editor was like, no, that's not, we don't go for that theory, so we're not going to publish any articles on that. And the guy put up the article before the third season, and he got a lot of it right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, wow. But I subscribe. My problem was, I would say the last 3-4 years it was more X-Files fandom than Twin Peaks fandom.
Mm.
And in my mind, that's what kind of killed it, because it's like, no, I want to read about Twin Peaks. I know that X-Files is cool and everything, but when I pick up a Twin Peaks magazine, I want to read about Twin Peaks. And they missed the entire thing about how Twin Peaks almost came back as a comic in the late 90s.
Mm.
So, bastards. Bastards.
That's too bad. I mean, they still got G-Fan coming out, and you know, there was a Planet of the Apes one for a while, which, you know, did the same thing. It's like different theories, different, you know, there isn't one that's overall. Can't we all just get along?
No. The whole Star Trek Orville thing has shown me that people can't get along. It's funny, somebody on Facebook posted, I like both of them, and they were attacked by everyone. Now, I've seen the first 4 episodes of Star Trek Discovery.
Did you buy the CBS service?
Someone loaned me.
Ah.
Their internet password.
Are they vulnerable to other people? Or?
I'll ask.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. But I've seen the first 4 episodes of Star Trek Discovery, and I have some canon issues, but in the end I don't care because the story is so good. I also like the fact that the captain is not the lead character. Because while the captain's interesting, the lead character they have is fascinating.
I have not seen it yet. So I'm waiting to yell at Corey, but he's doing good. He hasn't revealed anything I didn't know. I did find out that they did hire a continuity expert, so maybe the canon things won't be as big a deal.
Well, one of the things they've said is, this will all make sense, because the first season is one long story arc. They're doing a long story arc. The only thing that really kind of bugs me is that the technology, you know, this is set, what, 10 years before?
It's shiny.
10 years before original series, and everything is much more advanced than even Next Generation. So there's a part of me that's like, wait a minute, but there's another part of me that's like, well, a lot of the stuff they're doing is because they couldn't do it before. And these are new ideas, and if they were just, you know, retreading the same old ideas over and over again, I would get bored. Now, maybe there are Star Trek fans who just want the same thing over and over and over again. And for them, there's the Orville. But
well, let me ask you this. Could this Star Trek have taken place, like what I've always said, you know, when did the last Star Trek air? 25 years ago? Could it have aired, okay, we're going 50 years in the future?
No.
Okay. I mean, I know you can't, you don't want to say anymore, because I will probably have seen it by the next podcast, so maybe we'll talk a little more about it. But
well, I'm not going to spoil anything about it because it is a season-long story arc. But I will say that, I don't know how much you've heard, the first 2 episodes were supposedly the pilot, but they really weren't.
I'm only going to get the first episode. I'm not getting the CBS thing.
Well, the first episode was on CBS broadcast.
Yeah, I recorded that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's until it decides either cough on American Netflix or DVD rental, I probably won't ever watch it. Because I can't see buying that service for one show.
No. I'm not paying $5.99 for one show, and the other shows they're talking about, I'm not interested in. And it's like, oh, but we've got all the CBS Paramount stuff going back to the 60s. No one wants to watch that. That's why it's on MeTV and all the Cozy TV and Laugh and all the other digital channels, because they've run and run and run and run and run and run and run. No one wants to see Gilligan's Island again. No one cares.
Oh, I care.
That's why it's not on cable.
Don't you even care that Flash Gordon's coming to ChapelCon?
Which one?
The one with Queen.
Oh. Eh.
Well, let's see.
Now, if it was the people who did the Filmation Flash Gordon cartoon series, that I'd be interested in.
Yeah, I'd like to smack them a little bit.
Oh, their no, that series was awesome.
Yeah, their animation sucked.
That's because it's Filmation. They didn't have any money.
They killed almost an entire generation of animation. See, if I did a Roger Rabbit sequel, that would be my gist. And I think they did this in a Marvel graphic novel, too. Just, you know what? Roger Rabbit, either he's losing it because he cannot do the limited animation style. And then you can have all guest appearances by all the 50s. Well, not so much 50s, but like 60s and 70s people like Flintstones, Jetsons, Scooby-Doos, things like that. But, Filmation just almost killed an entire generation of animation. Now, look, as long as we're talking seeing things, did you see the Star Wars trailer?
I have not, because I don't really go out of my way to watch trailers. It was weird news showed clips from it with people talking over it.
I do know that
everybody went nuts for the new fuzzy thing.
I think that's more kudos to Disney. You know, this is something I didn't touch on when we were talking about Marvel making money. But, you know, Disney knows their market. People are all worried about when they said Disney's going to make their own paper streaming service a la Netflix. And I thought that was brilliant because Disney's got tons of crap. But that doesn't mean they're going to gut Marvel with Netflix. They're not going to gut Star Wars, because Star Wars, they make too much money anywhere. So they're basically, Disney knows how to get people's attention. And by doing this the way they did, I mean, I had people watching football game, fortunately it was a Vikings game, just to see the trailer. And when it hit, I mean, Facebook exploded with people talking about it. Although I do got to say that Snoke looks a little like a really, really old Mark Hamill, but that's just me. I'm the only one with that theory. My theory. Mine.
I already know who Rey is.
I have figured it out. Which follows me?
No, it's...
But brings us back to the host of soul.
No, it's Obi-Wan Kenobi's second cousin's daughter.
Rey, a tea with Janet Bread. Fall.
Don't go any further with that.
Well, you and Julie Andrews still have the restraining order?
No more. You can say fa, but you can't finish that word.
Oh, you're going somewhere I wasn't. Seriously.
That's because I'm a filthy, dirty human being. Well, what was in your box that you loved?
Oh, I've got a ways to go to catch up with you, but I told you I got the Orion Omnibus. So I got two Omnibus.
Oh, what's the other one?
Two more, I should say. I got the Punisher
Omnibus. Yes.
Which covers everything from Amazing Spider-Man 129, his first appearance.
No, that's not the Punisher Omnibus I got.
Well, I got two, because this is that one, and it covers the magazines, the Marvel Premiere, all the annual things from Spider-Man, his annual, the fight with Daredevil, into Peter Parker again, and then the first five-issue miniseries that was supposed to be four issues until they decided to tack on a five. So it's kind of like everything before Punisher was crazy.
Everything before he got his own series.
Well, the miniseries, yeah.
Because Shooter did not want the Punisher to have his own series. So it was one of those things, Shooter's gone, Punisher gets a series.
Oh. And then, of course, I got the Omnibuy that Corey's talking about. Oh, the one that comic book veteran Garth Ennis did.
Yes.
And what's fun for me, now let's see, what do we got here? Collecting Punisher 1 to 12. Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, Marvel Knights Double Shot 1, and Punisher, the second series, 1 to 7 and 13 to 37, which means the 8 to 12 probably wasn't Garth Ennis.
No, it was written by Ron Zimmerman.
Now,
who was a Howard Stern writer who worked at Marvel for a short time.
Much like the Master of Kung Fu, I have never read these.
What? You've never read the Garth Ennis Punisher?
Never.
Oh, that first 12-issue series is going to blow your mind.
I know. I cannot wait to sink my claws into this bad boy.
That is right after he got done with... No, I think he was still writing Preacher when he was doing it.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, it's good stuff. Nope, it was right after because the artist on Preacher came with him. Steve Dillon. Oh, it's so good. If you have not read Welcome Back, Frank, which is the Garth Ennis version of the Punisher, the 12-issue miniseries that kind of hit the reset button on the Punisher. Ennis gave the best interview for any series when he was talking about that, because they were like, well, you know, Punisher's got all this history about da-da-da-da-da-da. What are you going to do? Punisher's going to shoot a lot of people who have vowels at the end of their name. Well, what are you going to do about the continuity problem? And then that, I'm going to ignore it. I don't care. Well, there's this and this. I don't care. The Punisher is going to kill people. He will kill criminals. I will make the criminals interesting, and then the Punisher will kill them.
Yeah.
Which is a lot like, you know, Judge Dredd. Anybody in England who worked on Judge Dredd understands how these series work. The hero isn't the interesting one. It's the villain. If the villain's not interesting, you got no story, because the hero cannot change. It's the way they did Batman in the 90s when Alan Grant was doing it. Batman's not going to change, so the villains need to be interesting. Judge Dredd is exactly the same now as he was in 1977. He's the law. He captures you and he puts you in prison. That's it. It's the world and the people around him that make the story. And Ennis understood that. He actually has a new Punisher miniseries going back to Vietnam, which means Punisher's in his 70s, but we don't talk about that.
It's okay. I just read Punisher at the end, so...
So you know how it ends.
Yeah, I do.
So you haven't read the beginning. Now you skip to the end. You probably, when you watch a series on Netflix, watch the last episode first, don't you?
Sure, why not? And sometimes I used to do it more with videotape. I watch it backwards.
The other omnibus that came for me was Thor Volume 3, which is the last of the Kirby run. And then you could tell they were kind of flailing around, because with Fantastic Four, they had John Romita take over. Because Stan was kind of worried that without Kirby, the Fantastic Four would drop. So John Romita was drawing the number one book. And that was Amazing Spider-Man, so he pulled him over to that. But on Thor, they kind of went between John Buscema and Neil Adams. And I had not seen those Neil Adams issues, because they're priced way out of everybody's range, and they hadn't been reprinted before. Ooh, Neil Adams did a great Asgard. And then there was previews. How long have we been doing this? We've been talking for almost an hour, Joe.
Yeah.
So let's just hit the highlights in previews.
All right.
Karen Berger, who was the creator of the Vertigo line of books, is now over at Dark Horse.
And
her first book is actually a reprint of a book called Incognigro. So, because I already have it, I don't need to buy it. But in the early 20th century, Zane Pinchback, a reporter for the New Holland Herald, is sent to investigate the arrest of his own brother, charged with the brutal murder of a white woman in Mississippi. With a lynch mob already swarming, Zane, whose skin color is light enough that he could pass for white, must stay incognito long enough to uncover the truth behind the murder and save his brother. Hopefully that it's not going to be all reprints. You know, this is one that really... I'm kind of surprised it went out of print, because it was a very good book. But they're starting with this one. And really, that's about all I saw from Dark Horse that jumped out at me.
For me, American Gods hardcover, because I really want to read the series. I wasn't going to pick it up in the comic book form. So the fact that they're coming out with a hardcover, I think that's the big one. And, of course, American Gods is the outstanding novel that Neil Gaiman did, and now it's a Starz TV show, and now it's a comic book.
Let's see. Over at DC, Superpowers by Jack Kirby. They're reprinting the first two miniseries. Joe asked me why they're not reprinting the third miniseries.
Because he didn't do it.
That's right. Who was it done by?
You know, in my opinion, they weren't that good. I was going to say sucked, but I wasn't a fan of it.
The third one was by Carmine Infantino. And I am picking this up because it's Kirby, and I've got all the other Kirby stuff in trade paperback. So, while this was not prime Kirby, it was fun. And it's the only chance you're ever going to get of Jack Kirby drawing everybody in the DC Universe, including a very strange version of Batman.
For me, I'm looking at Lobo by Keith Griffin and Alan Grant. Some of the books that I had that disappeared in the dollar sale were some of the Lobo ones. You know, I was raving about Lobo's Blazing Chain of Love earlier, and I don't have a copy of the convention special anymore, so this would be a cool way to get it. And I'll probably continue with the Supergirl Silver Age Omnibus, since I got the first one. And that basically covers her early appearances, mostly in action. It's all in action. You know, she was kind of like the backup feature. And then when I have the action books, then I can turn around and sell the ones I have on eBay.
There you go.
I just need to read. I don't need to have them all.
Over at Marvel, there were two books that jumped out at me. First one is The Vision Director's Cut. Before The Vision was two trade paperbacks, they have since done what is known as a director's cut, which is the first 12 issues plus some extras and scripts and things like that. From what I've heard, there are no extra scenes, so it's not really a director's cut. But still, this is a nice one volume of one of Marvel's best books in the last 10 years. And then if you flip over, there's a trade paperback of stuff that's never been reprinted. It's called Black Panther, Panther's Quest. It is written by Don McGregor and penciled by Gene Colan. This is the 25-part story from Marvel Comics Presents about the Black Panther going to South Africa to save his mother. And it was actually the story that Don had planned after he finished Panther vs. the Klan back in Jungle Action. He still had all his notes and was able to work with Gene Colan on that story. There's also a Black Panther 4-issue prestige format series he did after this that hopefully they reprint, because they're reprinting everything that has to do with the Black Panther with the movie coming out.
Oh, yeah.
There was not a omnibus that jumped out at me, Joe, and felt kind of weird.
Yeah, I didn't. I don't have any books down. I got on a question mark. Doctor Strange, Lords of Fear, which I'm trying to get my previews open here to figure out why
it's
I questioned.
It's a bunch
that.
Of random stories.
That might be because I got to look to see first if I have them, because I still have a pretty extensive. Oh, yeah, here we go. No, a lot of these I don't have. Thor from 66, Dead of Night, Marvel Spotlight, 2-in-1. So they're covering things that I'm pretty sure I don't have anymore. The other ones that kind of jumped out at me, another Marvel Digest number 4, you know how much I've loved those.
Yep, that's from Archie.
Actually, a couple books that I'll probably pick up. The Phoenix Resurrection kind of caught my eye. Jean Grey's coming back. The adult Jean Grey. And Marvel 2-in-1 looks like it could be fun.
Tom Brevoort has been tweeting out some of the penciled art.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's beautiful. It just looks beautiful. All I can hope is that the inker is able to capture just how dense these pencils are. But this is going to be a very good-looking book.
Yeah, the big thing is I like to try them at least for 6 issues. But I think if they just do it like a couple buddy book, it could be fun. You know, I don't think we need a lot of angst or anything like that with it. But you know, we'll see what they come up with.
The other thing that Marvel's putting out, I haven't decided yet, that Cable trade paperback.
Yeah, I saw that too.
It's got Ladron's art in it, and Ladron is one of my favorite artists, but he seems to have left comics, but this was his real early stuff. And Jose Ladron, kind of burst onto Marvel all of a sudden, and his work looked like a cross between Jack Kirby and Mobius. It had that Kirby bigness and presence and that, but with a very fine, delicate line of Mobius. And I always just was in love with his art. And he seems to have dropped off comics altogether, which is a damn shame. But I'm very tempted to get that. I have all of those comics, but I may just get that trade paperback.
In the rest of previews, which is pretty sad when that's how you cover previews. You know,
yes.
The rest.
Yeah, there was nothing at IDW that jumped out at me.
No, I still am sticking with John Byrne's New Visions. I like that. Image. Mage 3, Volume 3, trade paperback. Howard Jenkins, Divided States of America. For other publishers, two things that caught my eye. I mean, there's a number of things, but out of Conundrum Press, they're doing the Collected Neil the Horse graphic novel.
Yes!
Now, this came out in the 80s. It was originally from Aardvark. Was that?
Aardvark Vanaheim.
Vanaheim at the time, yeah. Arn Saba did it, and it was 15 issues. It's a tagline, making the world safe for musical comedy. And it's influenced by Carl Barks, Fred Astaire. I don't even know if I could describe it, really. Maybe you could do a better job, Corey. But it's just something caught my eye, and I think I'll probably end up picking it up. And then
it was like a musical on a comic book page. There was dancing, there was singing. Arn Saba has not done anything else that I'm aware of.
Well, it said at the end, transition to Catherine Collins after the last issue. So I don't know what that means if the creator went.
Yes, the creator is trans.
Okay, so that's kind of
what. But I don't know if the creator has done any other comic books.
No, I'm going to Google quickly, just the name. The other thing I'll mention in passing, there's a new Mighty Crusader series from Archie. And being that the other series from Archie that I collect have kind of petered out, I thought, well, give this one a try. You know, if they could, I'm hoping this is the new version of the creators, that the old version, the old guys are still around, this is just a new team. That's kind of what I'd like to see. I'd like to see some of the legacy stuff still around. We'll see what happens. I'll give it a shot. Anything else catch your eye, Corey?
Over at Dynamite, there is a hardcover of The Shadowed, The Death of Margot Lane, written and illustrated by Matt Wagner. For most of the Dynamite stuff, he just wrote it, but for this series, he wrote and drew it. So I will be picking up that hardcover. Another thing I find a little interesting is a lot of the, I don't know if people follow the EC reprints as much as I do, but the EC archives, at first Russ Cochran was putting them out himself, but he ran out of money, so he partnered with Dark Horse. So as they go out of print at his publishing, they're showing up over in Dark Horse. So if you're looking for your EC archives, they're in two places. But I wanted to point something out, that there were people who were talking about the PictoFiction books online and how basically treating that box set as if it was gone. You know, oh my gosh, it came out and there's no way to get it. It's in every previews every month. And for what you get, it's a bargain because it's four books for $150. And while you're saying, oh, no, it's the big slipcase shot directly from the original art. The other thing is this has issues and stories that were incomplete. That it took a long time because Russ Cochran got the releases from the artists or, in some cases, the artist's estate to print this stuff. Because what happened was when EC ran out of money, they just, okay, I guess they printed up 100 issues of the two books that were done. And the rest were just, okay, I guess all we're doing is mad. He was able to assemble all the stuff that was partially done. So this is the last of the EC stuff with unseen Frank Frazetta pencil art. So I want to point that out. I'm looking for if there's anything else that really jumped out at me.
All right. Here's the dish for Catherine Collins. Apparently, they've tried her and whoever she's working with tried to option Neil the Horse three times in Hollywood studios, but it was never produced. In 2015, she got deported under the U.S. Patriot Act for crimes of moral turpitude, in other words, probably being a transgender woman. Back in hometown of Vancouver, she fell ill, diagnosed with leukemia, said she was on a full recovery in 2008. In 2013, was inducted into the Joe Shuster Award Canadian Comic Book Creator Hall of Fame. Sent an acceptance video to the ceremony. I don't see anything else that was done other than Neil the Horse. There was some earlier, we're talking like before 1982, radio drama documentary on CBC, things like that. But Neil the Horse seemed to have been the big one. I guess it ran as a Canadian newspaper strip and then appeared in 15 comic books by in Aardvark and later Renegade Press. So still alive, but apparently not really doing a lot.
It's always a shame to me when someone has something that groundbreaking and that cool, and then they leave comics. And there were a lot of people who did that. I was actually, for the New York Comic Con, I was looking at a lot of art that people were putting up. Somebody put up some Tim Truman art, and it's like, damn, Tim Truman was good. I know he makes a lot more money drawing stuff for the Grateful Dead, but damn, Tim Truman's good. But really, other than that, it's the usual suspects that I get. The Tomorrow's Magazine, the Hard Case Crime comics, you know, Judge Dredd stuff. One of these days, I'm actually going to sit down and read a bunch of 2000 ADs and talk about them on a solo podcast. Because really, 2000 AD is one of the most groundbreaking comics that American audiences don't know a whole lot about. But if you look at comic creators, pretty much every British creator worked for 2000 AD at one point or another. And they still break in a lot of new talent over there. Anything else jump out at you, Joe?
Not really. Just the usual suspects.
You know what's going to jump out at the listeners?
Plague?
No! These guys! Our sponsors!
That's right, here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads, and our first sponsor is me. That's right, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at LordShadowFlame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You could get them weekly. You could get them bi-weekly. You could get them monthly. You just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject, advertising. Thanks.
And after we finish our sponsors, we ask Joe the most important question of the week.
Yes,
Joe,
I'm wearing pants.
How much diet soda have you snorted?
Oh.
Nothing. No, no, no. It's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
I have spent most of the day just categorizing all my eBays, trying to figure out what sold and what didn't. I got everything up that didn't sell, found a few corrections, and made a quick sale. So I can still guarantee that if you do, as listeners of this here podcast, if you do find something on the eBays you want to buy, let me know, and I will... Well, first of all, let me know you listen so I can thank you properly. And then I will, well, it's not so much a vast accumulation of crap. Well, it's still pretty vast, but I would like to enjoy tossing in a freebie or something. I mean, if you buy, like, the Billy Batson and the Magic of Shazam sketch variant cover, I'll probably toss in some Shazam stuff. I made a deal with Dangerous Dan Moore. He picked up some books from me, and I got a couple copies of Worldwide News to maybe pepper into some lucky listeners. So you got that going for you, which is nice. Meanwhile, over here I have basically a long box full of comics that I'll be scanning and picturing and putting back on, including some stuff from my daughter Holly. So she kind of broke my heart. Here, Dad, here's my collection. Just sell it. She'll still read, but, you know, she's got boyfriends and swing dancing and a job and wants to buy a car. And
I have some of that. I have a car.
Yeah. And not me, bye.
Yeah.
Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z. Come get some.
And now my favorite part of the show. No, 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 not where I go out on the deck and drink pumpkin beer all night.
Woohoo!
It's Freakin' a Geekin'. Joe, what are you freaking on?
Pretty much the things I covered already. You know, Con didn't do as well as I did. Still waiting to hear back from Pat Broderick. I'm kind of like, when do I, you know, I did send him an email, sent him my address, and I was kind of like, I haven't heard anything from him. And I'm like, well, when do I start getting annoying? You know, do I want to send him another email or wait till next week? Or, you know, is he going to another con? Or, you know, I don't think he's taking the money and run. You know, there's always that in the back of my head. I've had it before where I've sent professionals money and nothing ever showed up. So
I haven't seen anything from him online either, so.
Yeah. So my guess is he's probably doing another con or something.
Or he's he does have a new comic series coming with.
He had two of the issues at the show.
That's the one that he's self-publishing,
yep.
But he's also doing one with writer Mark Ellis, who wrote the Outlands book series. So he could be working on that. I'm taking a look here and seeing. I'm not seeing any new posts within the last couple of days, so he may actually just be trying to catch up on... Yeah, the last post I see is from the 9th.
Yeah. And that would have been...
And that's with Jim Starlin.
Yeah. No, that would have been after the con, because I don't know if he flew back Saturday or Sunday morning, because I was busy trying to get all my meager. All I had were 9 short boxes to bring home.
Yay. Now, that guy, he has got the goatee.
Oh,
I've seen a picture of him at the
time. Oh, really?
He has got the goatee. That is an awesome goatee.
I didn't stick around because Pat basically, he had like 12 pages of a single issue of Firestorm that he was getting autographed and stuff. I didn't hang around for that, but you know, it was fun to actually finally meet the guy. So hopefully next week it won't be a freaking, and I'll have a nice piece of artwork to share with everybody. And the only other thing I'm freaking on, I got to be real quiet about this. Yeah, you know, my wife's going in for a colonoscopy tomorrow, so she's a little cranky that she didn't get to eat for the last 12 hours. Fortunately, I'm locked myself in the room, and I gotta run out too. So, I just didn't plan this very well, did I?
No.
Oh well, that's pretty much it. Corey, what are you freaking on?
Joe, did you read the preview of Doomsday Clock from DC?
Nope.
It's set 7 years after Watchmen, so it's a Watchmen sequel.
Yeah.
Everybody has discovered what Osmodeus did.
Oh.
And then we get to see that Rorschach is alive and in prison. Now, when this was released, it was at the New York City Comic Con, and somebody asked Dave Gibbons what he thought, and he said they didn't ask him about it, they didn't tell him about it, and after he heard that Rorschach was alive and in a prison cell, he said, obviously they didn't understand anything we did, which is what I have been saying all along.
And I would say just get over it. What do you expect from a corporation? They're going to monetize a property left behind?
Oh, not only that. Guess what other Alan Moore property is going to be showing up in DC Comics, Joe?
I would guess V for Vendetta just out the top of my head, but...
Nope, Tom Strong from the America's Best Comics. And all of those other characters are going to be folded into the DC Universe. Now, remember when Alan Moore created it, it was through Wildstorm. And then Wildstorm was sold to DC and Alan Moore threw a fit, and he was promised, no, there's a firewall between DC and the America's Best Comics stuff. Well, the firewall is gone, and DC is going to be using those characters too.
Yeah, and so, I know
they're basically, Alan Moore, that agreement we had with you, well, it was invalidated by the sale. Sorry.
I don't know why people would take such umbrage at it. I'm like, why did it take them so long to screw it? But on the other hand,
a written agreement.
I look at every other time DC's tried to fold things into their universe, it just doesn't fit. Shazam, yep. Wildstorm, they had Judge Dredd running around for a while. They had Mighty Crusaders running around for a while. Milestone, I don't know if we want to see Tom Strong in the Marvel Universe, or DC, maybe in the Marvel Universe, but not the DC
Universe. I don't
want to
see Tom Strong by anybody else.
I don't even see, to me that doesn't even bother me, because it's kind of like, if these are properties that DC owns, i.e. Time Warner, it's, if Alan Moore never wants to come back to it, so be it. It doesn't mean I'm going to buy it, but I'm not going to freak about it. I'm not surprised by it.
The last thing I'm freaking out is something that I saw when I looked through the previews, and then I read the people online, which I need to stop doing. I need to stop listening to the fans online, because they're idiots.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, the whole, oh, Marvel's falling apart. Well, it's their third most profitable year ever. Look, sales in the comic shops are dropping. Yeah, that's why they kind of started planning for that a decade ago. That's why they've got the Marvel Unlimited, which every place they go, they are pushing. Marvel has too many variant covers. That's the problem with Marvel. It's too many variant covers. They're ruining the industry because they got all these variant covers. Well, Looker, one of these indie books, has 25 variant covers. 25 variant covers. Belladonna, which is from the same people who do the Lady Death, now that Lady Death can have the boobs bigger in her head again. 19 covers, 4 of which are nude. Rocky and Bullwinkle, Joe. Rocky and Bullwinkle has 5 covers. If they sell 1,000 copies of Rocky and Bullwinkle, I'll be surprised, because when they had it at IDW and they had Mark Evanier writing it, it only sold like 2,000-3,000 copies. And now who's working on it? Joe Brony and his partner Joe Schmo. Barbarella from Dynamite. 21 covers. Barbarella, a character who no one has given a shit about since 1969, because the movie came out in 1968.
Corey, can I interject something that may make your freaking a moot point?
Sure.
The Yellowstone supervolcano may blow sooner than we think and could wipe out all life on the planet. So don't freak about it.
So we've got that going for us. Yeah,
which is nice.
But, yeah, Marvel sales are tanking. And they're still beating DC.
That's because DC's busy beating themselves.
You know, Marvel's taking all their characters and nobody wants them anymore. Well, the Justice League is selling less than Spider-Gwen.
Ooh, I like Spider-Gwen.
So do I. Whenever I get a commission now, it's Spider-Gwen. Joe, I'm going into a dive. Pull me out of it. Tell me what you're geeking on.
Well, you know, I hate the idea of the deadly wildfires in California, but the marijuana farms are burning too. Police had to disperse the crowds facing upwind. So if you're downwind, sorry. Speaking
if you're
downwind,
get in your car.
I picked one run of books out of my 19 long boxes to just keep. And Corey, I mean, it's not fair. It's like walking into a bookstore and saying, Corey, guess what book I'm going to buy?
I know what one.
Which one?
I know what you saved.
What's that?
Little Jinx from Archie.
No. But
Sad Sacks the Sarge?
You were close.
Richie Rich, Vault of Mystery.
Oh, no, going farther away.
Oh, I know! The Archie Jesus comics. Archie
they were never,
Sunshine.
They were never in there to begin with. And
oh, yeah,
definitely not the
those.
Girl who loved the swastika, that's for sure.
Yeah, those you need to get slabbed.
I pulled out my run of Kronos. That's the series.
Oh, yes!
Yep, the man out of time. And the reason I put it in to begin with is because I couldn't find all the issues. I was actually missing one. And even though I'm missing one, I pulled them out anyways. I need the number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
And I just figured what I love about this series was the opening where the Beatles are on stage, Pete Best version that is, and they're like, have I gone, hey, is that Puck Wallard there? He's there another night. He looks considerably a bit older than the last time he visited. So, but it was a short run character, kind of disappeared. I have no idea if he showed up in the New 52 again.
Who wrote that? Was that Tom Meyer?
Let's see, John Francis Moore.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like his name stays in it. Paul Dynan did the art.
Yep.
So I figured that
I
one,
love that book.
I will go back.
I thought
to
that was an
in.
Excellent comic.
It was a fun little run. I also got my copy of Slobberknocker, My Life in Wrestling, from Jim Ross, and I ordered it through, let's see if I can find their name, Premier Collectibles. So I actually got my copy autographed by Jim Ross. And kudos to Jim, he actually signed it in such a way that it looks like his name.
Oh, good!
You know, as opposed to sometimes it's just such a...
Did he spill barbecue sauce on it?
Oh, that would have been an excellent idea.
You know, we could talk to our friends over at WrestleCrap Radio and see if you could get Angry Jim to sign it.
Oh, now we're talking. But, yeah, this is Jim Ross, My Life in Wrestling, as told to Scott E. Williams. And JR probably knows more, forgotten more about wrestling than most people will ever know. and he's I've only got a few chapters left, but I've just been plowing through the book. It reconfirms some story. I noticed he started early on in the Territory Days.
Yes.
Unlike some of the last two people I read, he actually had a good family life. Not personally, because he let wrestling kind of take over for the most part, but it's really kind of fun read. Definitely worth picking up if you're a fan of this here wrestling that Corey and I is.
Boomer Sooner.
I did see and enjoy the Star Wars trailer. Just get me hyped to go see it. People at work are already like, oh, they're just redoing it. Empire Strikes Back. And I was like, you've been waiting 2 years to say that, haven't you? I said, you realize trailers, when you finally see this, is going to have nothing to do with the way you think it is. Even the sites like what we learned from the trailers, you know, all those goofy articles. I've read a few and it's like, they don't have any more clue than we do. Normally they can give out a few things like, oh, this is kind of cool, though. This is cool. But I'm telling you, man, Disney's playing this perfect. By the time Avengers movie rolls next week, we are going to be nose bleeding. So they do do it.
And then the Thor movie comes out.
Yes, it's going to be that. The Justice League, which people aren't very positive about. You know, people I'm talking about, non-comic fans even. But I'll go see them all, and who knows, maybe Corey and I will go catch them. If we ever get free on a Tuesday night, we can go catch those $5 movies again, because my new RDOs starting the end of the month will be Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So maybe I can go back to seeing some movies. Now with my 19 boxes gone, I actually got some room. I'll be putting more stuff on eBays, digging through some more stuff, so hopefully we be talking comics. I mean real comics, not just, you know, sales and abstractions in the next coming podcast, because now I can start plowing through things that I kept to read. And if they suck, well, you know, there's always the eBays. I'll always have eBay. Corey, what are you geeking on?
Joe, have you been to the grocery store within the last few weeks?
Well, actually, I was there yesterday. You know, I had to pick up a bunch of clear liquid stuff for my beloved.
Did you walk down the cereal aisle?
Well, of course. I mean, that's like a toy aisle for us.
It is the most glorious time of year. The monster cereals are back.
Bah.
Blueberry, Frankenberry, and Count Chocula are back. They do not have the retro boxes. They do not have Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy. But still, I have loaded up and am now ready for the coming year. Because once it gets to November, they're gone. So you got to load up for the whole year. I also... remember, Joe, when we went to Candyland and I asked for the French Burp peanuts?
No.
And then I've gone to other candy stores, and some of them have it, and some of them don't. And when they don't, I get that look on my face. You know that look on my face. That look on my face after I've cleaned someone's house, and they don't want me around anymore. The boo-boo face. I went to Amazon, and I ordered a 5-pound bag of French Burp peanuts for $15. And I have a big container, and I just poured them in. I have enough French Burp peanuts for at least a week, maybe two. And, of course, because I was in Illinois, I got the world's greatest potato chips, the Kitchen Cooked Potato Chips. My parents bought me 4 bags. And then I stopped at the grocery store and bought more.
Now, did you bring me one like I asked?
$15, little man. Put that shit in my hand.
You probably don't want to say shit when somebody's doing the colonoscopy thing around here. So yep, next time we see ya.
So, snack-wise, I am all set. My parents also sent me home with 4 pies. They know me.
They like you. They really, really like you.
Yep, they liked having me around. I didn't do much of anything on my vacation other than read and relax. I didn't even watch much TV.
I'm actually seriously thinking about getting rid of the freaking segment, because I'm pretty sure you've unrelaxed after that last freaking rant.
Well, once I read that story from the New York Comic Con of the retailer losing his shit, and, you know, other people were booing and Marvel shut it down, but... let's face it, Joe, there are a lot of comic retailers like that. There are a lot of comic retailers.
What you could do is...
and we have talked to them.
Go over to sci-fi.com in the video section and watch the interview where John Byrne and Walt Simonson talk about Jack Kirby and how Marvel should have handled the Fantastic Four.
Actually, my next briefing was Walt Simonson related.
Ooh. Serendipity, baby!
There is a video going around and a picture. What it was, at the Marvel booth, Walt Simonson and John Byrne at the Marvel booth. What? But Walt Simonson was drawing a head sketch for someone in a wheelchair, and he noticed that the person couldn't see. So what he did, he grabbed something to put the page on, you know, something hard that he could draw on, and sat on the floor so that the person he was drawing it for could actually see him drawing. Now, first off, that's a really cool thing to do, but the other thing I want to point out is Walt Simonson is 70. So for him to sit on the floor at a comic convention and draw, so he's sitting on the floor drawing cross-legged for, you know, probably 15 minutes or so, getting up was probably not the easiest thing in the world for him. And one of the things that I enjoyed, I didn't see a lot of stuff from the Minnesota Comic Convention on Facebook while I was in Illinois, but I saw a lot of stuff on New York, and everybody's posts were all, oh, cool, look at this. Oh, I met this person. Look at this cool comic coming out. People were excited about comics. They weren't doing the online bitching of, this art on Squirrel Girl's stupid. I don't know why I have to buy it. Why is Iron Man a woman? Yeah, I know. But it was more the feeling of, oh, cool. And it's the feeling I got when I watched the new Star Trek. I didn't go, hey, it doesn't conform with canon, and the lead character is a black woman. And for me, it was like, oh, cool. And I like that there's all this oh, cool stuff. And hopefully it's going to start drowning out these asshole fans online who, and we've known them forever. Joe, you had people who used to come in the store, and they'd buy their books, and they'd bitch the whole time. It's where our line, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most, came from, because Butch said that to one of the fans who was buying his stuff and bitching about every book he bought. In looking through the previews, I was like, oh, look at all this cool stuff from Tomorrow's. I had 7 Tomorrow's bag in my box. 7, including back issue number 100. I am set, man. I'm glad that I don't work this weekend, because I'm just going to read those things. Also in previews, Joe, do you have your previews with you?
I do, which is uncharacteristic.
I know. Please go to page 352.
Oh, man, I was on 350. Serendipity, baby! 352.
The Picto Journal Guide to Comics. I remember when these came out. These are beautiful, huge books. And what they were going to do was have a picture of every cover of every Golden Age book up through, like, 1960 or something. And then they did one for Marvel that went up through the 90s. They're still in here, and they're still at their original prices. Back when they came out, it's like, oh my god, $75 a volume. That's insane. Now it's like, well, that's as much as a Masterwork.
Yeah. And I know I have one of these downstairs. I just got to figure out which one.
I've got all 4 of them. I love them so much.
And folks, notice if you do have a previews, they're nice enough to list the star code next to it. So if you have that there star code, and you're not a previews connoisseur like Corey and I are, you can take that star code to your local retailer and say, hey, here's what I want to order. Can you order that for me?
And the last thing there are 2 things I'm geeking on, so it's not the last thing. Punisher by Garth Ennis. I started reading it. You know, this is a monster of a book. This is huge. It's a lot of stuff. But it shows how the Punisher needs to be handled. And it amazes me that it's so simple and yet so many people can't do it. And I'm glad that Garth Ennis is doing another Punisher miniseries. I kind of don't like that it's another one of these set in the Vietnam War ones. I'd rather have him do you know, kind of a modern take on the character and just kind of continuing the story. But I understand he likes doing war stories. But the fact that Marvel not only did this, but is keeping this great work in print, we've got to really thank Marvel and DC for the fact that they're keeping all of this excellent stuff in print. Because you could go to a comic shop and pretty much, later this year and probably through the end of the year, we're going to be doing our favorite comics of different eras, the 60s, 70s, 80s. You're going to be able to buy all of them. All of them you're going to be able to buy somewhere, somehow, in a trade paperback, in a hardcover, something like that. And I just always want to point out the fact that this is unique in comics history. You could go to a comic shop and, oh, I want to read Little Nemo in Slumberland. There it is. I want to read Little Abner. There it is. I want to read I want to read all of EC. There it is. I want to read The Early Mad. There it is. We've got just this amazing plethora of stuff.
Ooh, say that fingers. Word again.
Plethora.
Ooh. I get the shit.
And the last thing I'm geeking on is I read Marvel Legacy. And for what it is, it's one of those where, okay, this is a starting point, and all this stuff's going to be spinning out of it. Marvel and DC have been doing these for a while. You know, DC did it with Rebirth, and they did it, what was the thing that started for Infinite Crisis and everything, where everything kind of spun out of that. I like these books because it makes me excited. The Avengers of 100,000 BC is a fun idea. The fact that the Celestials are coming is a fun idea. I'm looking forward to this stuff. Marvel's Legacy did its job. It got me excited. Just like Rebirth, we went into it going, and it got me excited, but now it's just kind of, oh, okay. But Marvel Legacy's got me excited, and it gives me hope that someday, and you and I talked about this, someday somebody will go, you know, the Martians haven't invaded Marvel Earth yet, and they were supposed to do that already.
Yeah.
Let's do that! Well, believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books for an hour and a half.
Thank you!
And, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
Well, I didn't want to do it. This could be the end of the podcast. Forever. Corey, finish the sentence. Duck, duck.
Goose.
Oh, game over, man. It's over. It's over.
The whole gray duck thing is a Minnesota-only thing.
It's my
you
music.
People are weird.
I don't want to hear it.
You people are weird.
I don't know you anymore. It's my
you
music.
You say ish.
And I just
you eat hot dish, don't you?
Know. Oh, you're so hateful.
It's not hot dish. It's a casserole. That's why I call that a casserole dish, not a hot dish dish. Oofta.
You know, Corey, you're what they call Katrina when she forgets her left. She left her blade, a sword loser. Get my music.
Done, bitches!